banger of an episode in week two's edition of the Fantasy Film Room. Nate Tice joins me to break down the Eagles offense. How high are we pushing up Saquon Barkley in rest of season running back rankings? Maybe potentially all the way to the top. How about Aaron Jones? Is he now an every week start? And Marvin Harrison Jr., freak out or chill out? Man, what a sell. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, September 12th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Just in the middle of my... I love this. I'm in my middle of my first week of like real week of like prep and post review and now the pod schedule with Football 301 and now this show. So I'm feeling good. I didn't realize how much I liked routine. Mm-hmm. Until I got into media, and then I realized I'm a big routine guy, and I think I really like this routine with football starting, so I am doing wonderful.
Not a big routine in coaching and, you know, front office work, stuff like that, preparation as a player back in the day? Not a lot of routines there?
No. It's really funny, like, when a lot of, say, like, players that got into coaching and then retire, mm-hmm. how much of their life has been handled?
Yeah.
How much of their life has been like, hey, you have to be here at 6 a.m., and you have to be here at 9 p.m. You have to be here at 2 p.m. The bus will be here at 2:15. The bus will take care of everything. The food is here at this time. The food. So their whole lives, they've just had everything just outlined for them on an itinerary. And now a lot of them are like, I have to book my own travel.
Yeah.
Well, and they, when they move on to the real world. I think that's something where now I'm getting into the media that I was like, this is great. I just have to do the exact same things. My life, my whole internal clock, my whole life clock is set to the NFL season. And it's great because I get to keep doing it.
Oh, especially here in the fantasy world. I mean, you know, Tuesdays, waiver. Yeah, there's always a something to the day. So it's nice to be in the routine, really loving just diving back into what happened in week one and trying to spin forward, which is what we're going to do today, Nate Tice, in the week two edition of the Fantasy Film Room. Two things. Here. First of all, if you're new, if you're just joining us, this is how the Fantasy Film Room episode works. The first part of the show, I'm going to take a big picture trending topic, not necessarily always big picture, can be about one team like it is today, kind of a trending topic in the fantasy world. And Nate and I are going to break down the film, the X's and O's, and some of the advanced stats that go into why this is happening and if this is something we can continue to buy into. In the second segment, Nate has one topic that he's nerding out on and one thing he wants you to like, because Nate Tice, you know, he goes against the grain, wants you to like something that he likes. And, you know, then in the final segment, please, we are going to wrap the show with TNF previews, some prop bets along the way, everything like that. But Nate, second thing here, I have to, speaking of all that, I mean, bro, the first episode of this, you know, I'm not a big like backpat victory lap type thing. So I'm going to do that for you here. The first Fantasy Film Room here, we talk about number one, you know, tight ends, heavy personnel being a big theme of this season. Two tight ends, offense, Ravens, week one, Isaiah Likely is one of these stories in the fantasy world. Like, what's going on with Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely? Your topic that you were nerding out on was the Bills run game. The Bills, you know, James Cook doesn't have this massive game, but he has 19 carries in a game that they were trailing in week one. And then the biggest one, I mean, step up to the freaking plate and hit the grand slam was, you guys should like the Patriots run game. And Ramondre Stevenson, looking like a great pick in fantasy. The offensive line, as you said, is much better than people thought. So got to give you credit there. Three just outstanding topics in the first edition of this show.
It's all downhill from here.
Yeah,
that's it. That's what happens when you get 7 months of prep for week one. Yeah. And then it goes, and then it's like, oh, shoot, I got to update this now. I looked at the schedule and I didn't even know who was playing Thursday until probably Tuesday morning. And that's when I was like, okay, we got to update those. But I appreciate that. Thank you for letting me do that. It is sometimes basic is not bad, as like the Patriots run game is. Nothing like this is kind of, again, it's the emphasis that sometimes maybe it's not revolutionary, but the tried and true classics will work, like having a big burly back that can move and having an offensive line that's just competent running basic run plays. So, and against maybe a iffy Bengals run defense.
Yeah. So that was a great defensive front, but that was the timing of it all. Exactly.
Sometimes notice those matchups, and maybe I'll get a little aggressive with some takes, knowing that maybe they'll get answered pretty early on. That might have been one of them. But no, that was, I think all this stuff, the tight end stuff is huge. I see so much, a lot of emphasis. We talked about it. We're about to talk about one team with motion and everything, but also just what kinds of motion people are using right now. I would say not only just the tight end motion stuff that we talked about last week, but I would say just running back motion is really cool right now, and how they're using it is like a lot of people are just using it for tells. So I think just a lot of the stuff we hit on last week is, yeah, pretty kosher, at least for 1 week. We'll see how it goes on from here on out.
Yeah, we were Andy Reid coming off of a bye last week, you know, all the prep we needed, just pitching heat. But let's move on to week two.
First 15 were pristine.
The scripted plays were great. Now that we're off the script, let's see how this goes. And let's jump into our topics for week two here. Starting with the topic that I picked, we are going to discuss the Eagles week one offense, Nate, because this was one of my favorite offenses to discuss and kind of theorize about in the offseason. And honestly, because both the game was on Friday and justifiably so, I think most of the oxygen post game has been spent on the Jordan Love injury. Again, justifiably so, because, geez, my God, Nate, how much do we talk about the damn Packers receivers in the offseason? And now we're just theorizing, oh, who's going to play this role? Who's going to get this target share? And now they're catching might be doing a lot of heavy lifting there. They will be running routes with Malik Willis behind center for probably multiple weeks. So I understand why that was a big topic afterwards, but I feel like we should do a deep dive discussion kind of on this Eagles offense, because we haven't really talked about it on this show. So just to table set here, I said often this offseason that if the Kellen Moore, Jalen Hurts marriage went well, the Eagles offense would be one of the right answers in fantasy football. We talked about it a little bit yesterday on Football 301 and mentioned we would expand on this here, but one game in, I think that it's looking like it's going to be a hit. Yes or no?
Yes. I even kind of furthered that when we did our kind of hot and mild takes yesterday on Football 301. And I said my medium mild take was this is the best run game in the NFL, or is going to be the Eagles run game. Even if the underlying stats aren't the most overwhelming stuff outside, you know, fantasy scores for Saquon, but just the underlying stats, again, not overwhelming. The good stuff is there. The bones are really good and the talent is there. And that's why I'm very bullish on this. Just watching, just the concepts they're running, watching Saquon making them right a lot of the times, that's what was really cool. Running different types of runs under Kellen Moore, which is great to see that Kellen Moore and Stoutland are kind of merging worlds a little bit and figuring out some stuff. They're running a play called I like to call it Y insert. They're doing it with Calcaterra, their backup tight end, who's an iffy blocker, but he was kind of leading up on a linebacker. Much has been said about Saquon's good with having a lead back. I think he is. That's creating a lead back for him to read off of. They're just doing it from a spread way. A team that used to do this was the old Packers teams with Aaron Rodgers, with McCarthy before LaFleur got there, and they would do it a bunch with Finley as kind of that lead guy. So I think that was really interesting for me to see. I just also the offensive line, Mekhi Becton looked good at guard, or at least
Becton,
like that's
bro,
a steal.
That was a revelation to me, honestly, from this week one game. One, because I kind of just for a minute space that he was signed by this team until like late into the preseason. I'm like, oh, right. Mekhi Becton's just on the Eagles and oh, he's going to start at guard. And, you know, Mekhi Becton is freaking huge. He looks freaking huge at guard, but he was great in this game.
It's great. And they have size across the board outside the, you know, center is not overwhelming, but that's fine. Everybody else is just so big. So you got Barkley, who's a big, fast back. And so it's just this combo of size. They're just mauling. Like a lot of these runs weren't the prettiest, cleanest things where they're pushing and making these double teams. But then Barkley has the speed and the size to just run through a tackle. And now it's 9 yards as opposed to an okay. Like Miles Sanders would have bounced a lot of those runs last year. And some of them would have worked, but it wouldn't have felt like how it did on Friday night. God, I keep wanting to say Sunday. On Friday, that does not feel right. But even looking at the numbers, too, it's just focusing on the running back runs. And that would be my one thing that I want to see more from this team. Just completely dropping out the read element with Jalen Hurts. Because going in, this is a continuing trend from last year, and I do think it is concerning because this is part of Jalen Hurts' value outside just the QB sneaks, is that when he's on just designed runs, reading things out, he's just not a efficient running back anymore, or running back, an efficient runner anymore, and an explosive runner either. He can scramble still well. It's just the design runs. He's just not reading them right. Their runs, their concepts for it aren't just clean for him. I even looked on 11 non-sneak design runs in week one. He only had a success rate on 36.4% of them. Wow, so, yeah. So, and that's a continuing trend from last year. That's about the same as last year. I think I want to say it was 38% last year. And that was bottom three, along with Russell Wilson and I want to say Daniel Jones, were like anyone that had double-digit numbers for design runs. So he's still going to get the sneaks, but I want to see this offense just straight up run, 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 pass, 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 as opposed to RPOs and reads and all that. So, but I'm very optimistic that they'll figure out that math because it's more of a these are working, these are not. It's pretty cut and dry what is working, what is not. That's just straight up handing it to Saquon Barkley.
I hadn't thought about this from a Jalen Hurts perspective. I definitely was going to mention it when we talk about the passing game, because spoiler alert, I felt like the passing game worked pretty well in week one too. The only times that it really didn't was when I think Jalen Hurts just made mistakes or, you know, poor decisions, poor reads, things like that, which, you know, Jalen Hurts isn't Pat Mahomes. It's going to happen. It's not his game. That stuff, again, like I said, is going to happen. But overall, I felt from a structure and design perspective, it was pretty good. From an execution perspective, I think Hurts can tighten some of that stuff up. But I hadn't really considered how this also trickles down to him from a fantasy perspective as a rusher, because we'll get into the run game in a second. I'm with you that I want to see more of the running back runs and more of Saquon Barkley. And that might mean less Jalen Hurts as a rusher, because for whether it's injuries or just whatever, I don't think he's the same runner anymore. And he's going to get the goal line touchdowns. He's going to get some cheapies there, but they also, they were comfortable handing off to Saquon at the goal line as well. So that might make Jalen Hurts QB, and I'm not going to overreact yet. I haven't like ranked it this way, but if this continues to play out, he could end up being, you know, still probably a top 5-6 fantasy quarterback, but he might not have number one overall quarterback in his range of outcomes, because he's not the passer that a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes is. So that's just something I'm just going to put that in the back of my mind as something to keep track here. But I want to get back to the run game with Saquon Barkley, because I'll tell you this, Nate Tice, you're right. The numbers, they're fine. 18th in success rate, 28th in EPA per rush. Some of that is the quarterback runs as well. The numbers from an efficiency perspective weren't overwhelming, but like you said, watching it, we're just obviously so much more excited than what the numbers tell you. And from the biggest thing is just, I agree with what you said there, making them right, adding things onto the table. It felt very much like in 2022 when Christian McCaffrey got traded to the San Francisco 49ers. I remember this happening from a fantasy perspective at the time. People were actually like, could this be a negative because he's not going to get the same passing game work, you know, those targets and things like that.
Right.
He's maybe not going to get as many carries at the goal line, like kind of these nitpicky arguments. But really, it's like, yo, this is one of the best players at the position going to the best offense in the NFL. It sounds so brutish and caveman, but like, good. That's good enough to be great in fantasy. And we know how that ended with McCaffrey. And part of me, after sitting there on Friday, is like, why would we overthink this about, oh, is he going to get 5 targets a game? Or, oh, is Hurts going to steal goal line carries? Because this is just one of the best, most explosive backs in the league, going to an ecosystem that's already been a great rushing game without him. Like, okay, yeah, Miles Sanders and DeAndre Swift, look at their stats. Those guys are Miles Sanders and DeAndre Swift, and this is Saquon Barkley. Like I said, caveman sort of vibes, Nate Tice, but that was kind of how I felt on Friday.
Those stats that you're bringing up are, you know, again, you have to look at them, variables, but they're more like auxiliary stats. They're more cherries on top, as opposed to like, oh, yeah, look how much they target him on maybe on passing downs or they get the goal line carries. If this were the Lions offense and how they use David Montgomery or Javonte Williams or anything like that, okay, yeah, okay, if you're talking about Hurts and all that, how they cut into each other. But the thing with Barkley is he's explosive. So he's going to get touches. He's going to get touchdowns like we saw at 15 yards, 22 yards, 18. Like, he's going to get those touches in the red zone that he'll turn into touchdowns that we have before seen Hurts kind of vulturing him at the 1 and 2 yard line, because guys before were getting tackled at the 1 and 2 yard line. Barkley is not getting a tackle. Yeah. So it's just
great point.
He's there. It's not a plotter. He's explosive. And so, yeah, that it for me with Barkley, I think what was my only negatives on him, you know, he's so talented, have always been that once in a while he can dance a little too much. And then before he hits the hole, when, yeah, maybe because he was, it's kind of like a, sometimes you have to see it.
It's a chicken and egg thing, you know?
Sometimes I have to see it. And then I'm like, oh, maybe it's because he was behind the Giants line all those years. He's dancing so much because he's like, I don't know where the hole's going to open. And now it's a lot easier when he has, you know, Mailata and Landon Dickerson double teaming a guy and blasting him back 5 or 6 yards. And I really want to, I don't know what my takeaway is. I know we're talking Eagles, what the Packers defense is yet.
Totally, yeah.
I did think they did some nice things and they're kind of, they're figuring out some stuff too. Their blitzes were weak. We already talked about that, but on a show yesterday, but they're kind of made to stop the run more because they're more single high, which naturally puts more bodies in the box. So the fact that the Eagles are still able to be productive and explosive it's a good indicator, even if maybe the Packers are more mid-ish defense.
Yeah, that's always the challenge with week one. It's trying to adjust to the opponents when you don't really have a good calibre. Like, you can't calibrate to what these defenses are yet. Yeah. I mean,
Texas is back. You know?
Right, right. The Bucs and the Saints in week one. I'm excited about what I saw from those offenses in week one, as we talked about yesterday, but they played the Commanders and the Panthers. So, you know, which are two defenses. I don't know if I need to recalibrate too much to say that they're probably maybe 31st and 32nd.
Are you sure? You don't need more data points?
I don't know if I need. Yeah, I did get another data point from the Panthers. They lost their best defensive player by a mile for the season. So.
Yeah,
recalibrate to put them maybe they're 32nd and Washington is 31st. I don't know. That's my calibration. But yeah, that's kind of hard. We'll figure that out. But at the same time, like, the Packers do, even if we're still not sure about that defense, they do have some pretty good players up front. I thought they pushed Kenny Clark around a little bit in this game. So that makes me, again, just more and more bullish on this Eagles run game. You know, you mentioned Jeff Stoutland in passing. Maybe some fantasy players don't know that he is the longtime Eagles offensive line coach and has a big hand in what they do. He's just look at the offensive linemen that have come out of Philadelphia and some of the like lower tier players, lower pedigree players, Jordan Mailata, Jason Kelsey, and these guys have turned into superstars. And a lot of that comes back to coaching. And I think Stoutland being able to own a lot of the run game while Kellen Moore focused on the pass game, maybe, and I don't know this for sure, I'm just guessing here that's how the split has gone. Maybe that's why we're seeing such a good positive run game. I would say a more dynamic run game than we've seen from the Chargers or the Cowboys, Moore's previous stops.
Yeah, it's best. Offensive line coaches are going to handle the run plays as far as design. And then this is where... there's a lot of fights usually between the play caller and the offensive line coach, because it's a lot of like, well, call a run. Okay, I called a run. Well, not that run. This is the run I liked all week. Why didn't you listen to me?
Yeah.
And then the good coaches, you know, the Kyle Shanahans of the world, like Sean McVay's of the world, they're really tied in and going like, okay, you like that run? Okay, here's the play action I'm going to do off of it because we're going to tie this up. That's coaching and everything. The Eagles franchise, and I just, for anyone that doesn't know, this is my opinion on this. It's kind of a joke, but I'm kind of saying this seriously, is held up by Jeff Stoutland, like the entire franchise.
Yeah,
he's outlasted head coaches,
forget these guys, yeah,
OCs, quarterbacks, and it's because of his evaluation. A lot of offensive line coaches, especially respected ones, will get a lot of say in the guys they draft, and if you read any interview, you hear that, oh, it's Stoutland's guy. So if the strength of the team is the offensive line year after year, and they are the ones that are able to get this offense, doesn't matter what the OCs are, or what the head coach is calling or the play caller is calling, they're still able to be productive. I really am, you know, I feel pretty good with saying that the entire Eagles franchise is held up by their offensive line coach, their longtime offensive line coach in a way.
Yeah, Jeff Stoutland became the Eagles he's the Eagles offensive line coach from 2013 to 2017. He's been the offensive line coach / run game coordinator since 2018.
Pay bump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get a raise so you don't go anywhere else. I graduated college in 2013. that's how long he has been the offensive line coach.
10 years as an assistant coach in the NFL is ridiculous. At one spot is insane, and that's how respected he is. That's how many different head coaches is that? That's four? Four different head coaches, three different head coaches. Yeah. So,
yeah. I mean, yeah. At
least, if you stay from staff to staff, you're either the snitch for the owner or you're a really good coach. That is, and Stoutland's a really good coach. So, yeah. I know it's not the first one.
All right, so let's transition to the pass game a little bit, but let's stay on Saquon Barkley because, like I said, one of the concerns, and I think this is still something to think about when you're talking about Barkley from a fantasy perspective season long, how many targets is he going to get the whole thing? But, you know, like you mentioned at the top, we talk a lot about motion and how much that matters because it's just proven to be an efficiency booster for pass catchers. One thing we saw in week one, yeah, Saquon, as we mentioned, I think on the prop show, he was not going to catch more than two passes. He literally caught two passes. He got two targets. But Nate, both of those targets came on plays with motion, obviously including his touchdown, which that was what just jogged in my brain was he's not going to get a lot of opportunity in the pass game because of his quarterback and because they've got two dynamic receivers to throw to. He's not going to get those absurd Giants targets that he's had in the past. They don't need him to, but the targets will be more dynamic and more fruitful, more high yield than we're previously known to see.
Think of him like, yeah, like a deep ball threat at receiver. That's like, okay, it's the two targets for you're hopefully you're getting that 60 yard bomb and a touchdown that makes it justifiable. But that's what he is as a receiver. And that's Jalen Hurts is just not, the offense isn't built this way with Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts wants to push the ball and then run. And so they have two freaking awesome receivers. They have a pretty good tight end and Dallas Goedert. Those guys get the targets. That's how the offense is built. They're not going to be we're running 500 choice routes to Saquon Barkley like the Saints do with Kamara or CMC has done his entire career. Just not how the offense is built, not how he is built, or Jalen Hurts is built either as a thrower. That he doesn't want to do that. So I think what you just said is perfect. That first touchdown is exactly how his usage is going to be. It's going to be a designer play on a red zone or a throwback screen. So it's going to be one or two catches for hopefully, you know, it's a boom or bust. He's a boom or bust receiver, but I think he's going to get just steady usage as a runner. But that's just how the pass game is going to be built. It's just going to be so much Devontae Smith, so much AJ Brown. I think they'll use a good amount of two tight ends. Like I said, I mentioned Calcaterra before. So that's where I think that this offense is kind of leaning towards. That even though they traded a third rounder for Jahan Dotson, they got included a fifth rounder as every Eagles fan wants to make sure you throw in there and include that. Yes, they got the fifth rounder with Dotson.
You
got to
throw that in there because otherwise then you got the same bros in the offseason saying, the Seahawks traded a third rounder for Sam Howell. Doesn't that mean that he's going to compete with Geno Smith? It's like, well, just because a third rounder is involved in the trade. So you do have to, throw that in there.
Well, and also it's the argument if like you want to make that it was a good trade is that it's like, well, it's only 50 spots in the draft. That's the other argument you make. But it's like, yeah, 50 spots in the draft. That's 50 players. that's a significant amount.
It's all about your priors. It's all about your confirmation bias. Oh, that's all that really matters.
Don't I know?
Nate Tyson is priors, baby.
My priors, man. That's all I got.
But let's talk about this pass game a little bit more. By the way, Jahan Dotson watching this game back, I'm like, oh, I feel like he's doing a little bit of sacrificial X receiver stuff. Don't love that. Don't love
sacrificial that. Slot.
That's, I know. Oh God, my guy, Jahan Dotson, poor guy. All right. So this Eagles motion, though, as we mentioned, I think they sprinkled it in. It wasn't like overdone. It was Jalen Hurts 12th most dropbacks with motion in week one, according to fantasy points data. But again, it was hyper efficient. 9.56 yards per attempt, 134.5 passer rating on plays with either pre-snap or during the snap motion. The real thing here was the receiver play on the back end. If I mentioned Barkley, but AJ Brown. 2 of 3 targets with pre-snap or during the snap motion, 75 yards and a touchdown. His touchdown on Jaire Alexander, just that he was lined up in the slot as the off-ball player. They just kick him outside real quick. And, you know, you just see a slight hesitation from the defense and he's immediately got leverage on Alexander and he just toasts that thing because he's AJ Brown. 3.75 yards per route run on plays with motion. And then Devontae Smith, man, this I thought was interesting.
He looks so good.
5 of 5 for 64 yards, 3.37 yards per route run, and 68% routes from the slot when there was motion. It wasn't always him either. And, you know, going back and watching him play, some of it wasn't really, motion to get Devontae Smith free or something like that, because he doesn't need that either. I know you and I are high on him as a route runner, but now that he's being used more in the slot, more off the line of scrimmage, It's not that he can't beat press. He can beat press because he's a great technician, mm-hmm. but the throwing windows and him getting more layup targets as a result of this, I thought that was a pretty big revelation from this week one result.
And that's what some I want to study more is where those slot reps were coming from, because again, this is where that 12 personnel stuff might be, mm-hmm. because when you go 12 and I didn't even have this note. Kellen Moore was doing a lot of 1x3 formations. And what that is one the tight end is the lone receiver. He's the one, and the three is the three other receivers, or actually true wide receivers. So that is where Devontae Smith got in the slot a little bit. I like literally answered my own question as I was trying to ask it. So anyway, it came to mind, but that was that kind of 12 personnel stuff. The two tight end stuff is you can do a lot of what they call slot formations, which is the two tight ends are on one side and the two receivers on the other side. And that's a great man zone indicator mm-hmm. for quarterbacks. And also it will put Smith or Brown in the slot. And I think they have a benefit from that because you can get guys off ball, you can motion them, you kind of, and it's a great play action play or formation too. Hurts is a little iffy with play action, but it still is kind of like a good way to get to that. Kellen Moore likes that formation a lot. I think Smith would be, both these guys are great at Brown and Smith, yeah. but Smith is just so smooth, man. Like mm-hmm. you mentioned that press doesn't give him issues. It's because he can just bend like the best guys and like just like Gumby. But the, I think too is that you're mentioning the motion stuff and my old co-host Robert Mays will always say purposeful motion.
Yes.
And I always thought, yeah, this was a good example of it, that not all motion is built the same, where I think a lot of people's head is they picture jet motion, the little fast guy right at the snap of the ball, that they pictured that as motion. What Kellen Moore and what he continued to do was do a lot of indicator motions. I mentioned it before with the running back kind of quick back and forth. I've seen that around the league. But a lot of like, okay, they start an empty and then they shift, which is five wides, running backs out, and they shift the running back in back into the backfield. And this is just a staple motion or a shift. And what that does is you gives you man zone blitz indicators, a simple ones. Mm-hmm. Defenses are getting a little smarter about it, but that's for a discussion for a further time. That's maybe football 501. But those types of things is what the Eagles were doing a ton of. And I think Hurts and maybe Kelsey before were a little hesitant with a bunch of motion because it changes the picture. We've talked about that.
Yep.
But I think that this type of motion is more of a shift, more of a, we're going from this formation to now this formation. It's a little slower, but then everybody gets a nice, like, okay, that guy traveled with that guy. Okay, boom, it's man. And against a Packers team, that mattered a lot because they're a single high bunch. And it was either, is this man or is this cover three? Is this man? Does this cover three? So they used a lot of that to indicate that. So it's good. It's just that it's a great example how this type of motion is way different than what the Dolphins do or totally. Even what the Rams do or anybody does. I just think it's worth indicating that this is kind of a unique offense in the NFL.
Yeah, on Devontae Smith's biggest play of the night, he's lined up in the slot, and Barkley's the farthest out wide receiver to the right, and they motion him into the backfield, and he just kind of runs a little route there, and the linebacker comes up, and Smith just like kind of leaks out behind him. He's wide open there. On his other big play, he's the slot man. AJ Brown shifts out on the other side of the field. It's a cover three look, and like the safety in the corner are over there focused on him, and he just got, again, so much space. So the fact that they have both of these guys, man, is crazy, because like on AJ Brown, he had a 20-yard catch too. On that one, he's just he's a pure boundary receiver, and he just wins on a quick route and then gives you more yards after the catch. So it's just, they can do so many different things. And so to bring this back around to like a fantasy discussion here, all these things we've outlined, super high on the run game, the passing game has really good bones to build on. Like I said at the top, I think this could end up being, I think the Lions and then the Eagles are my two offenses right now that are just like they could be the right answers this year. Like, who won your fantasy league? Who had the most Lions? Who had the most Eagles? And like all these guys went high in drafts, but they're already players I'm sort of bumping up from a rest of season rankings perspective. So Nate, I'm gonna play a little this guy or that guy with some of these top Eagles players from just a pure fantasy perspective. Let's go running backs. Saquon Barkley first. Breece Hall, Bijan Robinson, Christian McCaffrey. I know CMC is kind of a tough thing to discuss, but like any of those guys,
or Saquon,
Saquon Barkley, because those were.
I'm out on Breece Hall. I'm low on Breece Hall. I'm lower on him because that just the Jets had, they're limited by because Rodgers can't move.
Yeah.
So that limited the run game, and I think that was apparent as I watched it, is they can't go outside. And it was, they just had indicators right away, tendencies right away. And that's scary.
Also, Nate Hackett's the offensive coordinator, and it's like, oh, you have tendencies. We're going to break those tendencies, baby. Let's
and as soon as, and as soon as they get against, you know, I mean, they did it against the 49ers, but I mean, shoot, they're not playing in like the easiest division in football. So that has me a little worried. I would say, man, I would have Saquon and Bijan as kind of my top two.
Top two?
In some way. Yeah. It's just how the usage is there for both of them. I think Saquon's in a better ecosystem, so he might be one for me.
Yeah.
Just because the CMC stuff, is that's a lingering injury. Mm-hmm. And that's just scary. That's just always scary. And again, there's just so many mouths to feed. Once he comes back, yeah, maybe we go there. But it's just that I think the usage of Bijan, he's gonna get so many touches in the receiving game and the rushing game, run game. But then Saquon stuff is just, this offense is gonna cook. We talk about it. It's like they're too good to fail. Like that's just, and I just think he's no matter what, it's gonna get at least those touches. They're giving him primary usage. Yeah. Like it's not like they split it. And this, so if he's healthy, he's the guy.
I'm with you. Like, you know, if we redrafted today, he'd probably be a top five pick in drafts now. Is Saquon Barkley. So if you can, I don't know, use any sort of still skepticism out there for a potential trade, I bet you could probably, and I don't love like in position trades. Like we really should be trying to make both teams better when you're doing fantasy trades, which is why it's hard to trade in fantasy because nobody wants to make the other team better. They just got to win the trade. I got to win the trade. Well, then you're probably not making any trades. So in position trades can be tough with that, but maybe if you could, maybe you could still get like Saquon Barkley for Breece Hall straight up. And I don't know. I'm not quite as Nate's got me kind of turning about this, but yeah, I agree. He's for me right now, bare minimum, a top five back. And I think I would rather have him over like Jonathan Taylor, Jahmyr Gibbs, any of those guys that were drafted ahead of him. Okay, let's do the receivers because I think this one's more interesting. I'm going to just say my receiver ranks rest of the season. You tell me. I'm going to get to AJ Brown pretty quickly, but you tell me if there's anybody that you'd have him over. CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. Those are still my top four, but I've officially moved Brown to my wide receiver five rest of the season.
I'd have him over Chase.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just because I'm a little scared about what that looks like right now. I know it's without Higgins and everything, but that also kind of hits it a little bit. Yep. So I would have him probably four.
Okay.
And now I'm really thinking because I wanted the Jefferson stuff is like, it's that's kind of how I was, that's how I was picturing. That's maybe get one more catch in there, but they had a good kind of a game script as well. So, you know, I might have those games where they're just chasing. So I don't know. I don't know how to rank Jefferson right now. Cause it's just, the Giants is a wacky defense to go against too. Cause Dexter Lawrence won every single play. So they couldn't really do a lot in the passing game.
And your Darnold, you know, priors, definitely those are intersecting right now here.
It's quasi there. I talked about
you
it.
You did appropriately hedge this like, on 301.
I wish I could have just been like waving that flag. And it's just more like, you know, I'd like the little mini flag. Like, yeah, all right. Yeah. There's my little Darnold mini flag I'm waving.
Well, don't worry. All the new Darnold bros, the new Darnold guys and girls are out there waving the flag. So for you, don't worry.
It's getting full.
It's getting full on that bus.
It really is.
That thing might be sinking any day now.
Time this has happened. When he was with the Panthers, he had that good month where he had a bunch of rushing touchdowns and everything. And I remember I did Bill Barnwell's show and he had me come on. He thought I was going to come on and take a victory lap about Darnold. And the whole time I'm like, I don't know, guys. This feels fake. This feels really fake. It's over-designed plays. It's a bunch of choice routes, a run play. Like, I don't know if this is going to work. And he was, like, shocked. He thought I was – and I, like, again, I'm willing to be real about this. And, yeah, I don't know. The bumpers are there. The training wheels are there right now.
And just we don't have to do the this or that with Devonta Smith because I think he's going to be a little bit lower. But I think he is a guy I'd give it like another week to see guys like, you know, Debo or Olave, these type of players. And obviously Drake London too, but I could easily see him being closer to a top 15 player than like fringe wide receiver. He was like a low end wide receiver too, as he was drafted as. So, and I bet because he didn't have the big performance like a Barkley or a AJ Brown from a box score perspective, he's still somebody you might be able to to buy in fantasy right now. So he's definitely somebody I'm closer to moving him into the top 15 than leaving him where he was drafted this year.
I just feel like he's going to be so steady every week. It's just where he's at in the offense, as far as we're just talking about location wise, how the reads are in that offense, you know, just picture CeeDee Lamb's usage. But it's not the same. It's not the exact one for one, but a lot of bailouts in that offense, or a lot of the quote unquote safer answers in that offense are his routes. That's where I feel like he'll always have a steady diet, whether he gets a touchdown, whether he goes 120, I don't know, but this feels like a floor for him. You know, like this is kind of just how I see his usage week in, week out. So I'm with you. I feel really good about where his fantasy usage is and just how they're using him in a real football wise.
Especially from when he's under pressure, Jalen Hurts, I think just Devonta Smith's going to be an easy answer, which might not be the case this week because they're facing the Atlanta Falcons.
So excited to watch that game, dude.
talk about a referendum game. There's going to be a lot of referendums and it's Monday night too. It's a Monday night football game. Yep. There's going to be a lot of Falcons chatter. It's almost kind of a bummer that I'm going to be on Football 301 on Tuesday as opposed to Charles, because that would be, but probably, I don't know what, I don't
Maybe
know.
We'll have him on for 5 minutes. Just
to check in.
Just Hannibal Lecter him.
Yeah, roll
just
him
wheel
there.
Him in. Take off the mouth guard, let him go, put it back on, wheel him back out.
that definitely feels like a defense that, you know, they have AJ Terrell, who, you know, George Pickens kind of got him a couple times in week one, but like that, and that was probably going to be the situation where he's following AJ Brown around. They might still be one of those defenses, or at least he ends up drawing him just matchup wise, where Smith could have layup after layup in the slot. So if you want to trade for him, I would try to do it sooner.
They also might run for 200 yards.
Also that. Yes, they might.
That's another thing too.
Yards in that game.
Hopefully, all Saquon, because that's how I picture it.
Speaking of running for 200 yards, the next running back we'll talk about is probably not going to run for 200 yards, but we have another running back to talk about after the break that we are very, very excited about. Right after this. All right, Nate, we are talking now about the thing that you are nerding out on. On the offensive side of the ball coming out of week one. And it's the Vikings running game with one Aaron Jones.
Yeah, this was, I had a take on this on Football 301. And it was really just I'm optimistic about the Giants run defense and the second half kind of defense overall. So maybe that's doing a little bit of my own personal defensive adjustment, my own power ranking adjustment that I'm doing in my own brain. Patent pending. That. Yeah. But watching that run game, it looked way more steady and way more explosive than I've seen this Vikings run game, at least in the last couple of years. And what has me so optimistic is what they get every week, and something we've talked about a lot, and actually something I'm going to talk about later with a different player, is this offense is going to see a ton of juicy run looks just because of number 18, Justin Jefferson. Yep. And when they get that, and now they get a running back that his touchdown was an explosive run. Even though it was short, it was him getting to the edge and outracing guys to the edge, to the corner of the end zone. That's what Aaron Jones provides. And this offense, he might only get, I think, that perfect range with his usage in this game is ideal. 14 carries, two receptions, maybe one or two receptions more on a screen or something like that. But 12 to 14 carries, this is what he's going to be. Maybe not a bunch of 120 yard games, 150 yard games, but this 80 yards, a touchdown. Mm-hmm. I just think that it makes a lot of sense in this offense, especially with him being able to create those doubles and triples in the run game. And when I watched it, it was steady. It wasn't lucky. It wasn't him just breaking five tackles. The run game was good as far as blocking wise. On the plays, Dexter Lawrence didn't completely annihilate.
Obliterate, yeah.
I can't talk about him enough because it was so impressive. One of the most impressive performances in week one, any position. But they still managed with that against I think is a good run defense from the Giants. They're still able to manage to rip off those yards. The success rate ended up being, I believe, over 50% overall.
Yep.
And it was both halves were good. And again, explosive plays and usage in the red zone, because Kevin O'Connell is going to be a run first guy. He has Shanahan bones in there. So he's going to get these touches. And I think it's just better in this ecosystem how he'll get used than maybe even how he was used as the Packers, because of, especially with Rodgers and just being so nickel and dimey and stuff like that. So I'm just optimistic. My take yesterday was that he'll set a record for rushing yards in the season for him, a personal record. Again, it's going to come down to health, but I just feel a lot better about how the floor of this rushing game, as opposed to it being boom bust that I originally thought it was.
Yeah, Aaron Jones' career high, 1,121 yards in 2022. So not even really that long ago. So yeah, you're thinking like a 1,200-yard rusher. Obviously, look, everybody's screaming into their phones at home. Injuries, injuries, injuries. And I said that to you yesterday. You know, obviously, talk to me in October, November. Week one is when we should expect Aaron Jones to look great. But great. To the point, he looked great. It, just in terms from Next Gen Stats, top 2 yards after contact per attempt running backs in week one. J.K. Dobbins, 8.3. Aaron Jones, 5.8. J.K. Dobbins, obviously, because he had that one long run. Mm-hmm. That's the thing about Aaron Jones is it's a lot like Ramondre Stevenson, who just like steady, steady, consistent runs the entire game. I mentioned this stat to you yesterday as well. On Football 301, 0% of his carries went into stacked boxes, Aaron Jones, in week one, which that's the Justin Jefferson effect. Again, from yesterday's show, I compared it to when Josh Jacobs played with Devontae Adams for the 22 Raiders and led the league in rushing. Because nobody has got, like, people like Josh Jacobs, sure. People know Aaron Jones is a good back. They are not going to sacrifice coverage players against Devontae Adams and or Justin Jefferson here in order to stack the box. Situationally in certain areas of the field, it's going to happen, no question. But Jones, as long as things are blocked up well, which to your point, for the most part, happened in week one, and this offense is functional, it's on your guy Darnold keeps the train on the tracks here, then I agree with you. He's set up to be, you know, maybe he doesn't end up setting a career high in rushing yards. That's like a good spicy prediction, but
I liked that.
I really like it. No, it was a great prediction.
It was a good way to like change it and then go and like, oh, the Vikings run game is going to be top 10, like, because I think I used that take for like 3 different teams.
Totally. Eventually, you run out of numbers. But I just like the prediction because I think he could end up being one of the most efficient backs in the league as long as he's out there. So I from a structure perspective, I love the way the Vikings run game looks. I think also now let's play a little game, this or that, with Aaron Jones, because he's a guy that honestly – I didn't really draft very much of, and I'm instantly regretting it just because, look,
same.
You know, he's an older back, questionable offense with the quarterback and everything like that. I also thought there might be more Ty Chandler in the mix, you know, and maybe that happens over the course of the season.
And there is. It's like a 2-1 split, it seemed to me, like two series, like a 65-35 kind of split. That's what it just seemed to me first game.
14 carries for Jones, 8 carries for Ty Chandler. Just Ty Chandler just, you know, didn't do anything with his carries. And, you know, from a receiving perspective, I think obviously Aaron Jones is more of a threat there. But, okay, so I don't think he's a top 12 back rest of season, Aaron Jones. But I think once we get to 13, like, okay, James Cook, Ramondre Stevenson, Travis Etienne, Aaron Jones, Rashad White, Kenneth Walker. I think that's kind of like a tier. Do you think he ranks at the top of that tier or at the bottom of that tier?
Top of that tier.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, top of that tier. Man, Kenneth Walker did look good, though.
He's banged up, though.
But he's already banged up, right? Yeah. There's the sharp. See, that's the thing. People got on me about the Charbonnet thing, and I said, this is just a long-term thing. This is not talking about anything against Kenneth Walker. It's just that's how he is. He's Sonic. he's going to run into a wall, and sorry, it's good or bad.
But yeah, I think I would probably still rather have Stevenson. Just feel so great about what we saw in week one with him. I still also probably would rather have James Cook just because I'm attaching myself to a great offense and another run game that you really like. But yeah, man, like ETN.
Davis is coming in, though.
Yeah, Ray Davis is coming in. And definitely same thing with ETN and Tank Bigsby, bro. I'm not like, I don't have a strong take on Tank Bigsby, but he definitely got in the mix there. And this is a guy that they have said over and over again, they want to cut his touches back. So, again, Aaron Jones might be like a top 15 back rest of season, as long as he stays healthy, all the caveats included. But yeah, I love the way that run game looked in week one.
He only got stuffed once on those 14 carries, and that's huge. That's bigger to me than anything. Because again, I thought this run game was going to be more boom bust because he explosive and everything, but I just thought they were more steady. Yeah. And I think that's just so huge because what he can put him over the top, but it's about the bar being lifted. So that all the underlying stuff looked good there.
He's just such a pro, man. I'm really excited to watch him. I hope he has a great guy, too. Every time I talk to Aaron Jones, he's like just a gem of a person. So I'm really hoping for good things for him. I hope he can be the king of the running back dead zone this year. That even though we gave the title to Stevenson this summer, I'm hoping that Aaron Jones can compete for the title there. Okay, let's move on to the thing, Nate, you want people to like. This is what I'm Nate Tice wants you to like coming out of week number one. You actually have two things today, so yeah. I'll let you go. Take either which one you want first.
Okay. Mine's, well, the second one is more like a pump the brakes, hold on, everyone chill moment. But the first one is Tucker Kraft. I want everyone to realize that this is the Packers tight end one. Mm-hmm. And this is nothing against Luke Musgrave and what his long-term ability is going to be, because he still has, I mean, incredible upside. It's just that what you see is Luke Musgrave is inconsistent, and that's why he's kind of in LaFleur's doghouse. And that's, again, I think LaFleur loves him. And this is a long-term thing. This is the Iuke thing. Doghouse because you're messing up so much. Okay, then hopefully in year Trauma. 3 or 4. Okay, yeah. And I know it's annoying for fantasy owners and everything, but in a real football terms, I think this will be good. But right now, who's not in the doghouse is Tucker Kraft. Mm-hmm. And Tucker Kraft is not just a big burly blocker from South Dakota State. He is actually a good receiver. And that's why I want people to love that this is a complete three down, or as my old colleague Dane Brugler would say, four down tight end. Like he can block, he can split out, he can catch flats and actually create them for yards after the catch. He gets up north in a hurry. So this is a guy I think, I mean, if you were kind of in on Musgrave a little bit, I'd be really sneaky looking at Kraft as well for what kind of season long leagues. But I mean, in dynasty terms, somebody should already have Kraft. But anyways, I still think it's that. I think it's his title to lose as the tight end one right now. Long term, who knows with Musgrave? But I do think that they have two talented tight ends. But Kraft is like more ready made than I think people realize. Like he doesn't look like a second year player from South Dakota State. He looks like a fourth or fifth year player. I think some production is going to come down the road. Maybe Malik Willis checking it down to him 15 times. But I do think this is a real football player. He is the tight end one. And that's because the coaches trust him, and also because he has the ability to be on the field. So it's just a guy I wanted to kind of champion a little bit, because he is a really good football player.
Yeah. There's a team I drafted where I punted tight end and I ended up with Luke Musgrave, and obviously took a fat zero for that in week one, but
stinks, man.
But doesn't matter, because the rest of the team rocked, and shout out to me, won that week. But I'm looking for a new tight end, obviously, on that. No kidding, I'm looking for a new tight end. I thought about adding Tucker Kraft, but because of the Malik Willis thing, I ended up not going with Kraft. But if you're able to stash him or something like that, or you're in more desperate need, you don't have a better solution out there, 3% rostered in Yahoo leagues, you know? So he could definitely be somebody that, once Jordan Love comes back, if the playing time trends hold up, he could be somebody that in 3-4 weeks from now, we're talking about as a priority waiver pickup.
That's kind of how I'm just wanted to get these out early, because this is just looking at playing time and hearing the coaches and how they interact with, you know, how LaFleur is. LaFleur is just a funny coach. Like, he just really is. Like, because he openly gets frustrated at his guys, but you could tell he loves them. So, yeah. But I just hear, reading between the lines of all this, it's Kraft's job to lose. So that's why I don't know how the stats will reflect it, because it might just be how it looked in the first game. But really, at the second half of last year, when Kraft was taking that role, he started getting more and more usage. So, you know, that they're gonna have some stuff for him. So I just, again, want to just mention him.
Yeah, I ended up adding Juwan Johnson, the Saints tight end, just because I liked that usage was there. And I've already actually literally have Jordan Love on this fantasy team, and I have Jaden Reed too. So I've got enough like Packers scarring and exposure to this Jordan Love thing that I don't
too
need.
Much.
I don't need more. It's like, let's not do
I
that.
I have him as my super flex QB in a couple of dynasty leagues, and it's just like, I went from like feeling so good about myself to like, just like, oh man, this I'll send a fourth for Malik Willis. Like, just that's just kind of how it ends up going. It's just like the saddest trade. It's like, this is what I have to do. God dang it.
Yeah, talk about sadness for sure. I'm so bummed about this Jordan Love thing. And people, by the way, Nate, are bummed about a particular rookie that went very high in fantasy drafts this year. Marvin Harrison Jr. was a consensus probably like round two pick in some sicko best ball sites. He was going in the first round, so that's where we're at. He was going in the first round one, which is how many catches he had in week one for 4 yards. And people have begun to watch the film on this, Nate Tice, and they're even less enthused. What do you have to say about Marvin Harrison Jr. And some of the things coming out about it right now?
Everyone chill. Everyone relax. I see that, you know, I've gotten access to the next gen stats and seeing the miles per hour rankings for everybody too. It's very fun to look at, but there's noise with everything. You have to look at context. And there's a couple contextual things with Marvin Harrison Jr. and the Cardinals. First off, the weather in Buffalo. We talked about this yesterday. Over 25-mile-an-hour winds. Not a lot of deep balls. Okay. Another reflection of what kind of happened on Sunday was the Bills ran a lot of cloud coverage, meaning cover two. Something, again, that we talk about with the top receivers, the Devontae Adams, the Justin Jeffersons of the world. Marvin Harrison Jr. already earned that respect from the Bills defense that they ran cloud coverage 39% of the time, which is the third highest in the league over the top of Marvin Harrison Jr. Third highest in the league for a rookie receiver. That's crazy. That's how much they respected this guy. So cover two, how you beat it is generally the hash area from like 15 to 20 yards, deep digs, deep curls, corner routes can beat it as well. Like you're just thinking of the soft spots of the zone, stuff down the seam. We see Trevor Lawrence hit one. We saw Joe Burrow hit one this week. But what they were trying to do was a lot of curl routes.
Yeah.
Curl routes aren't going to let you open up. You got to start and stop several times.
Yeah.
So if you see some people getting a little upset about, well, Marvin Harrison Jr. should also not wear black cleats. That's another thing.
We got to do something about that, Marv. Got to get rid of the black cleats.
It looks terrible. I know this is me saying it. I get it. I look at how I look, like how stylish I'm wearing with my Wisconsin t-shirt, my 10-year-old hat. But honestly,
my t-shirt from a random surf shop in Maine. We're not here to, we should definitely not be criticizing Marvin Harrison Jr. and any sort of fashion aesthetics.
No, for aesthetic reasons. So that didn't help. But the miles per hour is tracking. He was sub 17 miles an hour. And I think a lot of people are freaking out, but you got to look at the asks of what he was running. Yes, those are technically going down as vertical routes, but he's stopping and starting. He's curls. They're deep curls. And he didn't get targeted a bunch. Kyler wasn't pushing the ball a bunch. Some of the designs ended up going to like Dortch, who did okay, and just some of the design stuff. The targets are going to come. This is a run-first offense that was playing in a 25-mile-an-hour wind environment, playing against soft coverages because of Marvin Harrison Jr. Mm-hmm. So long story short, the touches will come. The receptions will come. This guy got tracked at like 22 miles an hour in college. Like he has long speed. We have nothing to worry about. So I don't know. Wow. I know week one overreactions are crazy, but like people just really don't want to say that this guy's good. Even in the draft process too, they're starting to hate on him. And it's like, he's just a good player. Everyone just relax. It's just sometimes the circumstances don't lead to Anquan Boldin in his first game against the Lions for 200 yards.
Yeah. So I'm going to definitely have something up about this game, exclusively pretty soon. Two things I'll say. One, I definitely in future weeks don't want him to just be that like decoy, that defensive attention guy. I'd love to see some more routes to intentionally get him the ball, which I almost guarantee you is going to happen. Almost maybe even an overcorrection in week two, right? Where
it's like, this is just start spamming. We're
not having this guy that we took fourth overall, just catching a pass for 4 yards. His draft spot, how cute. In week two.
Yeah, his first round. Cute. One for four.
Also, playing the Rams in week two, that is a very vulnerable secondary. Just watched Jameson Williams go on the routes. By the way, I'd love to see Marvin Harrison Jr. run, which is, go routes. I'd love to see more routes over the middle of the field. Jameson Williams, who's faster definitely than Marvin Harrison. However slow Marvin Harrison Jr. is, okay, fine. But he's definitely not as fast as Jameson
that's
Williams.
That's
safe to say. But so that's my first point, is I'd love to see just some different usage from him. I'd love to see more intentional ways to get him the ball. I think it was a little too Dortchy in week one. That's cute, but okay.
Not enough Dortch.
A lot of Dortch in old week one. The second point, I will just point out that I would actually say that if you go back and look at Marvin Harrison's reception perception profile, I would say the one area that I thought he, as a route runner and as a separator, he wasn't great at was working back to the football, sometimes on those stop and come back routes. Mm-hmm. His comeback route success rate was 71.4%, which relative to prospect averages was his lowest. Relative to prospect averages.
Relative to mortals.
Yes. Yeah. Was his lowest success rate. I think, just again, I trust this Cardinals coaching staff. I'm sure they're going to do more than just have him run a bunch of deep hooks against cover two, which, as you mentioned, that's always going to be problematic. So yeah, I do think there's some overreaction here. There are just some slight concern. I definitely think it's okay to be slightly concerned, because I want to just see different route trees, different plans and things like that. But overall, I'm with you, a little bit of an overreaction to week one.
Yeah, I think it's more the concerns come with how he's getting used, like as far as for production purposes.
Totally.
But as far as football terms as him as a player, I don't have concerns, if that makes sense. Like, it's more like, oh, yeah, he's still him. It's just that, oh, okay, this is how you guys are looking at him early. And it might be a week one thing where they're like, yeah, he might get some respect, but he's a week one rookie. Who knows? And then they go in there and they're like, oh, shoot. They're actually like really respecting him. And so like that happens all the time, like especially in week one. These guys are game playing like crazy and they have counters to counters. And sometimes that just kind of happens. And that's why the run game can be productive. And that's why they pound the rock on those long drives. So, yeah, I rewatched it. And once I kind of, I mean, his route, it's nice. I can look at the route tree or the routes run, not the ones just that he got targeted on. And it was just like 12 yards and back, 10 yards and back, 15 yards and back, 12 yards and back. I was like, oh man, this is Hitch and Curl City. So I watched each one, and that I think it was 9 of his routes were hitches or curls or something of that sort, which get grouped together, 7 of them. So yeah, that's kind of how it goes.
Brutal plan. I honestly, I thought it was a rough plan for that
passing game plan. I was a little disappointed.
That was disappointing.
I thought it'd be more creative. The run game was fine. I thought the pass game would be a little more creative week one.
Yeah. Well, again, we'll see what happens in week two. They play the Rams, very different style of defense, and definitely from a quality standpoint, I think quite a bit lower than what they got going on in Buffalo. So I'm like I said, just small little things I'm definitely keeping in the back of my mind to be a little concerned about. But from football perspective, I'm not really worried about Marvin Harrison Jr. All right, let's take one final break. When we come back, we're going to break down the Thursday night game, which, speaking of those Buffalo Bills, is pretty excited because they're participating in it. Right after this. All right, Nate, Thursday night football, Bills and Dolphins. Pretty electric matchup here for a Thursday night game. One piece of news going into this one, we are not going to have Raheem Mostert. He has been ruled out. So this is going to be the Devon Achane, Jeff Wilson, maybe Jalen Wright, who was a healthy scratch in week one. People just kind of forgot that, oh, yeah, Jeff Wilson like still plays for this Dolphins team. Interesting. I think this backfield, and Achane's also dinged up a little bit too. So honestly, I don't really know how to read this Miami backfield here already in week two.
And that's why I get always so scared. It's like I see these guys, especially when drafts, and it's like I know Mostert led the league in touchdowns last year and Achane did all this, but it's like these guys are all tiny and get hurt, and that scares me. It looks like our colleague Charles McDonald's dark horse rookie of the year is the
Jalen Wright. That's right.
Is the path is getting built for Charles right now for that bold prediction. I have no idea how to feel about that backfield. I was fairly impressed by the Bills defense and what they did against the Cardinals holding up. Also, the Jags defense showed a very good blueprint to go off of. So I'm curious on how much the Bills defense uses off of that. I think Josh Allen's going to run. This is a defense that's going to Dolphins defense that's going to kind of go every which way, especially from the line of scrimmage, blitz looks, simulated looks. I'm curious how much they do, but Josh Allen and quarterbacks against those looks, it's good scrambling looks. So I'm looking at over rushing yards. You're going to hear me use a lot of quarterback scrambling numbers because I always find those are Thursday night hacks for prop stuff. But I do think that's kind of what I focus on too, is just that, is how Allen reads those out with all the funky looks. They're going to run every type of coverage possible. That's kind of what this kind of scheme does. So how he reads that out, I think a lot of shorter passes and a lot of scrambles from him. Actually, it's going to look similar to the game plan where they play in the wind and against the Cardinals defense. That's pretty funky too. And where they pound the rock a lot, where they look at Josh Allen's legs when they need to, and just more of efficient passing as opposed to maybe something downfield.
Yeah. I don't really think that there's not like a receiver to really still target here just yet. You know, Keon Coleman, I know he had the 20%+ target share. He led the team in routes run. You know, Brian Thomas Jr. had a great game against the secondary. I do still think there's quite a bit of a drop off from Brian Thomas to where Keon Coleman is, especially as a separator and as a mover. Talk about week one rookie film that was impressive. Brian Thomas Jr., but man, he's about to cook.
So much further along than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, he's about to cook. I'm still not all the way there with Keon Coleman, although the opportunity is great. I just don't see a ton to really just go on just yet. But that would be the only thing for me here is I how do we feel about a Dalton Kincaid kind of bounce back game in this one? Because I will say, watching back that Cardinals and Bills game, the Cardinals were paying a shitload of attention to Dalton Kincaid, more than maybe I thought, over the middle of the field. But that can also just be the defensive structure, not necessarily Kincaid specifically.
I would say if I were going with Kincaid overs or something, it would be receptions. And just because, again, peppered as opposed to yards.
By the way, if you're on BetMGM, over 4.5 catches is plus odds right now. So, yeah, I think that's probably...
What's James Cook's receptions at?
James Cook, 2.5.
4 yards. But
my receptions is 2.5, the over, but it's minus 145. Like, what's the
yards? Do you know? Sorry, I've actually was trying to pull this off. So this is great.
James Cook, 18.5 rushing yards.
I like that.
I like that, too. Yeah, that's a good one.
I could see some checkdowns happening where, again, when you got a defense that is going to do stuff at the line of scrimmage and run back, but those guys, when they get their heads turned, they're worried about getting beat deep. And so what happens, we get a lot of those types of defenses, you can find a little check down, run a grab after that. So that's something I do like. As you are looking for a receiving over, I'd like James Cook more than anyone else in a way. I was trying to think on the other side of the ball. God, it's like all the overs are probably minus 180.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill, the over under set at 98.5 yards, minus 105. I mean, what's the point? Okay. Jalen Waddle, 63.5 is, I could see throwing something at Waddle. It's just so tough because this defense is, you're going to try to not give you the deep ball. But I loved the way he, again, I thought, Nate, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I thought that last year was Waddle's most impressive ISO route running film so far in the NFL. I thought he just from, because people don't realize this, like he is, because they do so much gimme stuff with Tyreek Hill, they'll line up Jalen Waddle as the furthest outside on the line of scrimmage player, and he gets a lot of like tight physical coverage. And man, in week one, I thought he looked, you know, Jaguars defense, played a lot of man coverage, and I thought he was, from a separation perspective, just on not the flashy routes, but the base routes, man, like just slants, over the middle stuff, some curl routes too, although that's not the basis of their offense. Like I really thought he was separating extremely well too. So 63.5 is a big number, but and obviously he left the concussion scare. I do think that he's someone that's on the rise in just from a rankings perspective.
He's so good over the middle, for especially for a smaller guy like that. That he has so much heart and balls go over the middle. I mean, even the one he got hurt on last week was. I mean, he got smoked on it, and he's trying to come back out in the game. Like a lot of the smaller guys, they take one hit like that. They're like, nope, I'm out. But Waddle, yeah, he's just a heck of a football player. That'd be one. Dude, what's Jonnu Smith at?
Not listed.
Oh.
Not yet, that maybe. Maybe closer to kickoff.
That's how you win on these. Those are the sicko ones that you have to find. You have to find like tight ends and like, under 5.5 receiving yards for running backs, just stuff like that. So
the only other sicko one I would give out is like, we'll see if I'm hoping Curtis Samuel plays more. I almost imagine he does, and he's at like a measly 17.5 receiving yards right now, so I could see him getting the over on his catches is over 1.5, and it's minus 160, so what's the point in that? But the way I'd go for it, but I bet he plays more in week one than he did in week two. So that's kind of the situation. Really, from a fantasy perspective, this is a game where you know who you're starting. You're starting the two Dolphins receivers. You're definitely starting Josh Allen. I think Tua, this is probably a good game, like early season, potentially high scoring in Miami game. This is when we're kicking up expectation for the damn Dolphins. Yeah. In the backfield, I think Achane, as long as he plays, you're starting. The other guys I'm probably not trying to mess around with just yet because we have no idea there. Although, yeah, Jalen Wright, like if you're waivers have already run, I'm sure these guys are on rosters at this point. And then on the Bills side, I'm still waiting to see mode. The biggest storyline is just with the receivers. Like, who does this rotation hold from week one? Because if it does, then Coleman's stock is definitely on the rise. But we'll see again how that looks here in week two. Yeah.
You're starting Josh Allen and then James Cook if you have him like that. Because I feel like Cook will get his touches every game now. That's just, again, like we talked about, man, I wish he was like a 250-pound bruiser because this offense would be perfect for him, but still it's a good fit for him. I do like his receiving yards.
All right, buddy, that's gonna do it.
All right,
that was a great show. I feel like we unpacked a lot. I feel like we've adjusted some expectations, hopefully not over adjusted for some of these players we discussed today, but it was great stuff, man. And Nate, appreciate you doing it. Definitely, if you are not subscribed to Football 301 with Nate Tice, myself and Charles McDonald, you got to go over there because we ended some careers and coaching tenures yesterday very irresponsibly, and I'm sure no one's upset at us. Yeah.
We fired two head coaches and a quarterback after 1 week. I felt like that was not even justified. I felt like that was tempered responses. Yeah,
the assignment was spicy takes.
Yes,
and the wheel decided, and we just went for it. So if you don't know what the hell we're talking about, go listen to the show.
And Football 301 fans seem to be handling it well. They understood the assignment, other than one Lions fan that said, "Hey, I know this was supposed to be spicy, but you really think the defense could be better than the offense?" It's like, that was the assignment. I just wanted to accomplish the assignment.
Again, Lions fans, I'm really happy for you guys, but you can't be upset that Nate said one side of the ball was going to be better than the other. Like,
and I said, like, one's going to be fifth and one's going to be seventh.
Exactly. Like, I know you're feeling contender. Yourself right now, but it's okay if Nate says one side of the ball is going to be better than the other. It's still an overall good thing about your team. So let's be chill.
Yeah.
Let's be chill. All right. Again, that's going to do it for today. Shout out to Nate Tice. Appreciate you for joining us. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Nate_Tice. In the meantime, on Friday, Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts join me to preview all of Sunday's Week 2 action. I mean, what a time to be alive. Football is fully back. The film is being studied. The metrics are being unfurled before our eyes. Oh, man, it feels great. Until then, we're out.